Start the recording. Oh, so y'all love soundtracks? Good deal. All right, let's get unmuted, all the things. Let me split the screen. There we go. All right, John Acuff, welcome to No BS Land.
How about it? Can you hear me all right? Are we good?
Yeah, we're good. And they're excited. So,
yes, great. I'm excited too.
Good. Yep. We have a coach named Yesenia who is actually leading the book study for us. She's going to be in the chat, so she'll do all that. And then if there's any good questions that come up from the audience, what we did was we pre-polled them so that we just have all of your questions
perfect.
All done. rely on the spontaneity of the internet to dictate things. All right. Do you want to tell them just a little bit, just what would you love the No BS women to know about you that they might not already know?
I think that something that people are surprised by is that I work really hard at positive thinking. Sometimes people think because I'm positive online or, you know, I write positive books that it's natural to me, but it's not. I'm a very kind of, I skew melancholy. I tell people I skew Counting Crows-ish. Like my wife and I went to a Counting Crows concert and she was like, this is so mopey. And I was like, this is amazing. So it's not that I'm naturally wired for positivity. I just see the benefits of it and the power of it. So I work really hard at it. So I always try to tell people I'm in the same trenches. I'm dealing with the same things. It's not that I woke up and said, I'm joy filled today. I'm going to conquer the universe. Like I just have a lot of things I do to have the kind of life I want. And then I love to help other people get unstuck from the life they're stuck in. So I love to be kind of a slingshot for other people, but I always tell people, don't let my positivity come off like it's just, I sweat out happiness. Like it's a work in progress and I'm working at it.
I'm the same way. I think people think that I'm naturally confident. They're like, oh my God, like you speak on stage, you do all these things and I'm not naturally confident. I have to work at that. I have to think about it. Like it's, I think anytime it's so interesting that you led with this. I think our brains are naturally wired as humans anyway, to always be looking out for danger. And we create like, we always teach our brains just like look for faux danger because there's not enough real fucking danger in the world anymore. I mean, it's not like you're going to go outside and an animal's going to eat you.
There's no tiger. You and I will never be attacked by a tiger in Nashville. Fingers crossed. That won't happen to either one of us.
Unless Auburn comes to town and the
mascot but then it would get out. But the odds there are low. The odds are pretty, they're still pretty low. Like,
exactly.
If that tiger got out, I just wouldn't go to the mall that day. I'd be like, oh, well.
Exactly.
There's a high tiger alert.
Yeah. So it's just, I think it's just good for people to really realize that the life you want has to be created. It has to be deliberately thought about. It's not just going to, you know, sprinkle out of the sky for you. So, okay.
No, and so my version, so like what I'll tell people about that is same with getting in shape, being healthy. Nobody accidentally improves their life in any area of your life. You don't accidentally have a good marriage. You don't accidentally get in shape. I've never met a single person that was like, yeah, I was binge watching Squid Game on Netflix. I looked up and I was doing burpees. I don't even know how it happened. It just kind of, but you don't accidentally have positive thoughts. Like it's a work in progress. You see that, wow, I want that. I can see the results, the kind of thing I want. So I'm going to do the steps and the actions and the thoughts to get to that result. So I think once you know that, because, you know, social media kind of creates this image or other people have this image and you think, well, that's different from me. They have, you know, they were born that way or whatever. But I think once you get around people who are trying to change your life, you realize, wow, there's a lot of us working on the same things. That's encouraging.
I think that's also a good point. Then we'll eventually get to questions. But I was actually reading something today that was talking about this person was kind of basically going over their experience the last few years, and they have experienced a lot of success and stuff. And then they started talking about the people that they hang out with, and they were like, it's no mistake that I'm successful because I've decided to hang around other people who are like working on their life. And so like it was like one of those things where it made me realize just how important it is to normalize that the life you want has to be worked at. You know, it's just like most of us are hanging around with people who are sitting around looking at everybody else's life. And we're all like bitching and commenting about, you know, why is that not for me? And like, my life is such a shit lot and all this other stuff. So yeah, it's definitely a work. All right. Here's the first question by the No BS Women.
Let's do it.
So one of our members noticed this soundtrack about putting off her workout. I'll just do it tonight. Because we always try to get people to do everything in the morning because your brain is way more likely to be on board. What sneaky soundtracks have you noticed in your life and how do you deal with them?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a million. You know, the other day I was on a Hertz shuttle bus. I was in Denver at the airport. I was going to get my rental car and a guy got on and he dropped his water bottle and it must have been carved from Thor's hammer because it was apparently like solid metal. And it startled me. It just scared me. And I immediately said to him, well, that wasn't startling at all. And I threw up sarcasm. And I paused in the moment. I was like, wow, what just happened? When I'm scared, I deploy sarcasm as the shield. Versus what if I had said to him, wow, that was really loud. That scared me. He would have gone, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, it scared me too. And so I paused there and thought, wow, sarcasm tells me it'll protect me. But I think often it's harming me. Because I don't get to be in real relationship. I don't get to be honest. So that's a soundtrack that I've kind of had to go, wait a second. Am I deploying sarcasm to hide from from processing the real thing, from admitting the real thing? So that's a sneaky soundtrack for me that is fairly, fairly recent. Another one is I need X amount of time to do it perfectly. So I think sometimes whether it's a workout, whether it's writing, I'll go, well, I wanted to write for an hour. I only have time for 50 minutes, so I'm not going to do it. And people do that with their workouts all the time. They go, this really requires 40 minutes. I only have time for 30, so I'll just do zero. So I'm trying to put less rules on my life. One thing I've learned is the more rules your goal has, the more fragile and brittle it is.
Right.
So if you say, I can only do my meditation in this part of my house, this time of day, like what happens when you travel? You don't do it. So like I'm learning to be more flexible with my goals so that they're not so rigid that I don't actually do them. So like looking at my life and going, that's too rigid. How do I make it a more flexible goal? Has been really helpful.
Yeah, I think there's a good balance between like I like to think about things that I want to change for myself. And so I try to create what I call the ideal. Like ideally, this is what it's going to look like so that my brain at least knows, you know, here's what we're working towards and stuff. But one of the concepts that we teach is that minimum baseline. So there's like a dance between here's the ideal. We know that this would be great if we can do this, but we're not just going to like shit all over the goal because we can't do it perfectly.
Yeah.
You know,
we're still going to do it. Like we're still going to do it. So that's the tension. That's the, and dance is a great word for it. It is a dance because you want to keep, you know, like you want it to have some, you know, to be ideal. You fought through it. Like, one of the things that I'm really fascinated about, I've been studying, do vision boards work? Because you hear all people talk about vision boards and there's all this really fascinating research that what works is you have to envision the outcome, but also the work it'll take to get the outcome. Mm-hmm. And most people don't want to envision that. So they just take photos and they go, I'm going to be in this shape. I'm going to own this car. But they don't mentally rehearse the work and that prevents them from actually doing it. So if I'll go, okay, here's the thing I'm going to do. And let me think through the steps it's going to take and mentally rehearse that. I'm much more likely to accomplish it, but you do need the ideal. I need the result. I need the ideal, but more importantly, I need the steps that will also contribute to me getting that ideal. It's not enough for me to go, I'm in amazing shape. I've written a book. I need to envision the steps it'll take so that I can mentally rehearse them. I love mentally rehearsing. I don't want the first time I'm doing it to be the first time I'm doing it. Same with a speech. I want to have that. I want to know that speech. I want to know the flow. I want to practice. And so that's how I think about goals too.
Yeah. And we do something. And so like, you should be a Nobius woman, honestly.
I know, but you guys, it's right there in the name. Like I'm fairly easily disqualified. Like you're right. It's right. Like the no BS part. I'm like, yes. Cause you and I don't like the same stuff. Like there's stuff when people are doing like, and they're making people feel ashamed and they're telling them things to do that they're not really doing in their own life. They're telling them things they've never researched or thought through. They're not tested. They just feel right. But in the real world, they only cause more shame and failure. And then, you know, so like you and I, the Venn diagram of us is pretty overlapping.
One of the things when it comes to process, because like what you were talking about, we talk about, especially in weight loss, like you talk about the mental rehearsal and we talk about the other key component is you got to fall in love with the process because like most people they do is they fall in love with the goal. They fall in love with the life they think they're going to have. And they just obsess over it and vision board and manifest and do all kinds of stuff, but they don't want to fall in love with the process. And that is like, I think One of the things that's really missing in weight loss is actually teaching someone, how do you truly lose weight in a way that you're going to love, that you're going to respect yourself, that you're going to want to take on the road, you're going to want to take to your mama's house for Christmas. Mm-hmm. Like, you just want to take it everywhere. So yeah, that's good. All right. So somebody actually asked, because it was really funny that you talked about sarcasm. Do you get mad easily, or do you see the humor in things first?
No, I mean, I would say I'm learning. I feel like a young 45 where I'm learning. Like, I have a counselor I see once a month who's kind of a counselor, you know, performance coach. And so I would say that sometimes I overreact initially, and then it takes me a minute to process it. So I would love to say I immediately go like, oh, that's funny. Like, but there are situations where my reaction doesn't equal what really happened. And I have to pause and go, okay, what, you know, I always tell people every reaction is an education. So when you overreact to something, you've got a chance to educate yourself and go, wow, my response didn't match what that really was. What was really going on? Was I deflecting? Was it something else? So I feel like self-awareness is a superpower. And I wish I had known that at 25. I feel like I'm late to the game at 45, but I'm learning to go, okay, wow, I was really mad about that. And it really didn't need that much of my passion. What I've learned is, if I'm over mad at something, I'm not creatively expressing myself in other parts of my life. I believe that's true of most people. The reason the internet is full of so many haters is that everybody's passionate, but they're not expressing it. And when you don't express it, it only has one avenue, and that ends up being anger, that ends up being trolling somebody else. Where I find that happy, creative, engaged, hardworking people don't have a lot of time, energy, you know, for anger, for hating on, you know, hating on somebody else's goal. And so if I'm ever doing any of that, then I have to pause and go, wait a second. Although, like, so here's, this wasn't anger, I guess it was more like frustration. I spoke at an event like 3 weeks ago, killed it, felt great. It's like 700 people. I was like, they were like, it was amazing, we loved it. The next day, my friend spoke at the event too. I texted him, said, how'd it go? And he said, it went great. And then he said, like, and he wrote a really nice text, but he said, I was so excited, I got a standing ovation. And I immediately was like, screw my life. And I was like, wait a second. Like, his standing ovation had nothing to do with my moment that went really well. I don't want that to steal my joy. And so in moments like that, I can feel that come up. Mm-hmm. And where I'm trying to get better as somebody who's living out of their full heart, not just pieces of their heart, is I go, wait a second, what just happened? And I can see it as an outsider and go, is that how I want to react? I want to be the kind of person, my counselor said to me, the true sign of friendship is when you can celebrate somebody else for something you didn't get. I didn't get that. I want to be that person. I'm not always that person, but it's a work in progress.
Yeah, that's one. I just love that you talked about having a counselor. You know, a lot of the ladies in here, you know, we're not their counselors, but we're definitely their coaches. We're the one place that they can talk about a lot of things.
Totally. That's the benefit of community.
Yeah. And I just think the world has so much still to this day, has so much shame around asking for help, getting coaching, having somebody else look. Like, I have my own coach. I meet with her each week. I tell people all the time, the reason why I can lead y'all is because somebody else is looking at my shit wide brain and helping me sort it out every week.
Totally. Totally. Like, in ridiculous. So I went today, you know, so I went and saw my counselor Friday. We did 2 hours. It was awesome. He's in Murfreesboro and he's brilliant. And then today I met with my personal trainer, because I realized running's not doing it enough. Like, it's not enough. I'm in my mid-40s. Like, muscle mass is just like, adios. Like, I wake up every morning and like muscle is in the car in the driveway leaving my house. And then third, I met with an operations manager today. A lot of the things you and I talked about after your podcast about my business, how you run your business, I'm not good at them. I'm not good at systems. I'm not good at, you know, operations and management. And so I need somebody to do that. So that's why I believe in communities like the community you had. Like, one of my favorite signs of how good you're doing is I had a friend, a guy friend of mine, like a big kind of football guy. And he was like, does she let dudes in that group? Because he heard you on my podcast. And I was like, it's no BS women. But that's somebody saying, okay, I can tell she's really helping people. And so I think it's great that we need other people to help us too.
I do too. I think it's like the moment in my life, one of my soundtracks growing up was, so I grew up very broke, I was the oldest child. My mom was single. She relied on me all the time. And so it developed this soundtrack of I'm alone. Like if it's going to get done, I've got to do it. Like
you better figure it out on your own.
Yeah, it was always that way. And I've carried that through my adult life. And so a lot of times it's still the soundtrack I go back to when I get angry or frustrated or I get disappointed in people, I go back to that a lot. But one of the things that I think is so great about just like as you get older and wiser is you get to rewire some of those soundtracks. You get to tell yourself like, you're not alone. Like, that's why I like having this community. I just never wanted another woman to ever feel like she was alone in weight loss ever again. She just didn't need to be. She needed people, understanding, coaching, questions answered. Like, there's lots of things we need, but we don't need to be alone and we don't need to feel bad about it. Those are two things I know for sure no one needs in weight loss.
Yeah, so. Exactly. It's hard enough. It's hard enough as it is. You don't need to add isolation to it.
100%. Exactly. Somebody, I will eventually get to my questions, but somebody asked a really good one. She said, what do you do when you've made bad decisions in life, like your career or with money, and you've been unhappy, but it's your own fault? How do you move forward?
So I have, there's three things I believe about that. And I'm doing like a three-part series on my podcast about this. I think the first thing you do is you forgive your former self. Like you need to forgive your former self. And if, you know, you got things to process them, you got amends to make them. Like toxic positivity says you're the most amazing person ever. And everybody who disagrees with you is wrong. Like, I'm not saying that, but you need to forgive your former self. And a lot of times there's situations other people have forgiven us for, but we're still paying that debt, even though the debt's been long paid. Mm-hmm. So you have to forgive your former self. The second thing is you enjoy your current self. How does it mean to enjoy? Like, I never want somebody to have a weight loss goal that they say, once I weigh this amount, once I do this thing, then I'll like me. No. Like, start liking yourself today. You don't have to wait a second to learn how to, you don't have to lose an ounce to learn how to like yourself today. Enjoy your current self. Third is prepare your future self. What can I do today that sets me up for success later? What do you know? How do I be kind to that person? And a really easy example is when I was younger, I used to get so mad in the morning that I was tired. And I would act like, I don't know who stayed up so late. This is garbage. Like, why did that? And like, I was the same person, but it was like morning John was furious at night John. And I wasn't preparing myself for success in the future. So for me, it's forgive your former self, enjoy your current self, prepare your future self. And if you can do those three things and be kind to yourself during the process, life is so much easier.
That's a great answer. Let me ask you this. So what are some soundtracks you can use to replace My Weight Loss Is So Hard?
I would flip it and go, okay, I like to do daily ones where you go, today I put in work. Today I put in, like center yourself on the moment. No, like not this big, I think sometimes broken soundtracks travel in absolutes. I've talked about that in the book. Like always, never, everyone. I mean, I'm working with my kids on this. I have two teenage daughters. We're actually for the first time ever doing a teen version of one of my books. So many parents said, hey, if I could have learned this at 13 or 14 or 15, it would change my life. So me and my two teenage daughters are writing a book on soundtracks for teenagers right now.
Oh my and God, so, that is amazing.
Yeah. So it's, I can't wait. Like, and I can't, like, I have a box over here. This is such a crazy story. So like 10 years ago, I talked to high school audiences a lot and I would ask them, write down your negative voices, and they'd put them on cards and they'd send them in anonymously. I have a box of 1,000 of those on my shelf and I never threw them away. I don't know why I kept them. And then it was when this book came out, it was like, oh, that's what they've been waiting for. And so like one of the soundtracks we're going to help teenagers with is the word enough. The number one word that's on those cards from teenagers, teenage girls, teenage boys is enough. I'm not pretty enough, smart enough, skinny enough, you know, talented enough, rich enough. And so for me, when my daughter says I'll never get good at geometry, I go in and go, whoa. Like, no, never's not the word. Like, you can learn geometry. Like, you can get better at geometry. Let's focus on the day. Today, I worked on my geometry homework. That's true. That's helpful for you to work on. So I wouldn't say my weight loss journey is hard, because that's a really big overarching statement. You might say, today I put in hard work, like, because maybe you did, or this is a challenge, but I'm bigger than the challenge. You don't lie to yourself. It's not, you know, like your brain knows, like, no, that was hard on the bike today. That was super hard. And if you try to tell your brain, it was really easy today, I felt great, I'd rather you take credit for the work you did and the difficulty than have a big sweeping statement that feels like a wall that stands between you and your health journey.
I think that's great. I literally was reading something. I wish I could remember the whole quote, but I read on Instagram where, you know, all good quotes are found. And the meme was talking about like stuff about your past and everything. So like when our girls think about weight loss being hard, that's because their brain is going way off into the distance and they're thinking about every single hard thing they're going to have to do. And they're also bringing a lot of their bullshit from the past, like past diets that were actually hard and unsafe. And their brain is having this traumatic experience right now, thinking like, you're fixing to reintroduce all that horse shit that you've done. So of course it's going to be scared. But this meme said, there's a reason why the today is called present, because today is a present. And I just was like, that is so, like, it was just such a flip in the way to think about, get focused on what's happening now. What is present in your life right now? And most of the time when we narrow our focus into the now, it just calms that part of our brain that wants to have a trauma response, or that like overreacts to things or makes things bigger than they need to be.
Well, and your brain likes to fix fictional problems to prevent future pain. So when I say, okay, operations, I'm going to try to grow my business. I like, one of my broken soundtracks is, you're going to have to fire people. The people aren't even hired yet. They don't even exist yet. And my brain is like, oh, you're probably going to have to fire somebody, maybe even at Christmas. And they have like a couple kids and like, it's going to be terrible. And I'm like, what? That person hasn't even been hired yet. But your brain, to your point, is trying to protect you from pain. So it's trying to predict, here's all the possibilities. None of those have happened. All I can do right now is stay here and go, okay, well, here's what I'm going to do today. Here's, you know, I can't do next month's work. Like, no one watching this right now can do next month's exercise. You can't. You can do today's. You can do today's, and that's enough. Like, that is enough for you to do is today. So you can't binge ahead and do exercise ahead. There's no way to do it.
Yeah, I catch the girls doing a lot of what if in all the time. I was like developing content all day long. And one of the things that kept coming back in like course note after course note of things I wanted to talk about was the habit of what ifing. Like, well, what if I don't like it in a month from now? It's like, who gives a fuck? Try it today. You may love it too. Like, but our brain, I love the way you said our brain is trying to solve fictional problems, because that's really what those are.
Well, and here's the thing, it's on every level. So people say to me, John, how do I protect my ideas online? I want to write a book. How do I make sure somebody doesn't steal the book? And I go, have you written the book yet? And they'll go, no. Then why are we even talking about that? Like, I want you to write the book first. Or they'll go, it's kind of like going, what color will my cover be? And you go, oh, you've written a book? Well, no, but I just want to make sure I've got the right, like, it's too, or like, as a parent, it's so easy to go, like, it would be easy for me to go, I've got a senior daughter in high school. Who's she going to date in college? She doesn't attend college yet. And I'm like, is this kid going to be like, have a weird mustache and he's going to be like lazy? Like, she doesn't go to college yet. So the brain does that on every level. And if you can recognize it, you can come back and go, how do I enjoy my current self? How do I enjoy that?
I will tell you how y'all pay attention, because this is how you do it all the time. They will not want to lose weight because they're like, what if I have loose skin? Odds are they are, but I'm like, but what if you do, but you're so fucking thrilled with the rest of your life, you're not obsessed over it. I mean, it's not worry. Yeah. Like, I'll teach you how to deal with loose skin if that even is a major problem for you. But for now, let's just get it off. Love the process. Figure out how to love yourself every single day. And I bet you by the time you get there, that's going to be a problem. That it's like, I lost weight and I had loose skin. And I'm not saying that I don't ever think about it, but I tell people all the time, I would never fucking trade going backward. Ever. Yeah. Like, it's not like one day I'm just like, this is some bullshit. You know, I've had loose skin for 15 years. I'm ready to regain 100 pounds. I'm all in. Yeah. Like, that moment's never come.
Well, and the other thing is, you'll be a different person then. So by the time, like, let's get to that spot, because you're not going to be the same person. So if you go right now, how would I handle that? It won't even be you. A year from now, when you have that issue, you'll be a different, healthier person with different motives. So like that person will be able to handle that problem. Don't, well, let's go get that problem. Let's get, you know, it'd be like, I think sometimes we throw up what I call noble obstacles, which I've wrote about and finished, where I'll see people say, I don't want to start a side hustle, even though I feel called to it, even though I have a passion, because I don't want to ignore my kids. And you're like, you're going, so you're not putting in any side hustle work right now, but you're worried about being a workaholic at 100 hours. Like, let's get 10 hours in before we go. I would just, and then you're using your kids as an excuse not to do it. Like you're throwing your kids under the bus going, I'd love to do this, but I got these kids. And so it's a really slippery slope. So I always say like, be careful you don't have a noble. It's kind of like somebody going, I'd love to get in shape. I don't want to have to buy a lot of new clothes. Let's get there. Like they sell sweaters. They'll sell you additional sweaters. If you have to walk into a store and get a new sweater because you've lost weight, you're not going to be feeling bad about the sweater. You're going to be like, yeah, that's right. Give me some new sweaters. That won't feel like failure.
Well, that it's so interesting you said that, because I was sitting there thinking about like, on Loose Skin is, you said, you know, like the person that you evolve into, like when you get your goal, you're like a different human. One of the things I think that happens with our women is right now, most of them are scared. They're insecure. They don't know how to turn off their soundtracks yet and stuff. But the version of them that ends up losing their weight does know how to do that. They do know how to talk better to themselves and stuff. So the version of you that's looking at Loose Skin is not the one who weighs 250 pounds anymore. Yeah. She's 150 pounds. She's every day proud of herself, enjoying her life and stuff. And she can have Loose Skin and it not be the end of the world, because her emotional capacity has changed over time. That was such a good point. I know I keep harping on it, but Loose Skin is just a big thing for us. We use it for self-sabotage. We use it for, we fear ourselves. We do all kinds of stuff.
So another version would be, I don't want to write a book because what if people criticize it? They're going to. I got 0 one-star reviews when I was a copywriter for corporate America. 0. Nobody ever was like, John Acuff's not good at sitting in a cubicle. He has the dumbest cubicle. Like his posture in cubicles is bad. Nobody criticized me. I write a book. Guess what happens? There's now a vehicle for me to receive 1-star reviews. But just like you said, you wouldn't go back and trade it. I would never trade those books on that shelf that I wrote because I'm afraid of some 1-star reviews. Nope. Mm-hmm. Like bring it. Like that is, there are certain prices you pay to awesome. It's an admission ticket to awesome. So everyone here would pay and should pay the ticket of Loose Skin to get to awesome. Like pay that price, pay that admission price. Like, yeah, let's go.
That's another thing though. A lot of our women, one of the things that they like, there's like this idea that, well, I'm afraid to lose weight because people will now start noticing me. They'll make comments about my food and they'll do stuff like that. It's just interesting for you to think about, all of you, what he was just talking about in terms of, you may get criticized, but in my mind, I would much rather get criticism and learn how to have my own back in the moment and learn how to, over time, let go of criticism to get my goals than to sit and wish for them for the rest of my life, want them for the rest of my life, regret that I never did it, but you know, I didn't get criticized.
Yeah, no, it's not like, and I always tell people like regret has a longer shelf life than fear. Like fear is the moment, regret is a lot longer. So like fear is like this big wave you have to deal with. Regret is like this slow trickle that cuts a whole mountain in half. And so I'd rather, it's like, do I deal with the fear of today or the regret of forever? Like, cause there is fear, like there's fear that I go through. There's things I do that, you know, force me to be brave. I'm constantly trying to find ways to level up but also you've got a community. Like that's the other thing. If people do the things that you just described, that's why you have this community. I have a circle of friends that will screenshot mean things people say to us and go, look at this. Like this was like, or like this hurt my feelings at first, but this is ridiculous. Like you're in one of the best places to say, hey, I got my first criticism about what I eat. Somebody said, I thought you watched your weight. Why are you eating that? And they tried to shame me because I had ranch dressing. Nope. Like, and then I bring that to the group and go, hey, I got some ranch dressing shame today. Anybody else? And somebody else is going to go, oh, I got some blue cheese hate. Like you're going to trade those stories. And that's the point of community.
That is such a good point. I hope all of y'all heard that, because it is one of the, I think, best things about No BS. And I think it's one of the, not only do I think it's one of our strongest, strongest assets that we have. I mean, the course is good, all that kind of stuff, but literally the community is what I think glues everything together. Yep. But being able to normalize what's happening as you grow and as you change, I think is always really key. Otherwise, you just feel like an outlier or like something's wrong.
You feel alone. You feel alone in it. And I think there's a powerful thing that happens when you say something and 10 other women say, me too. Five other women say, I've had the same thing. So that's, use the community, be part of the community. That's the benefit.
So you were talking about writing a book with your girls. What's the best way to help someone else with their soundtrack, like your children or your partner?
So a lot of times it's to help them hear what they just said. Like, it's kind of like reflective listening. If you've ever done reflective listening, where I'll give you an example from somebody who wasn't my kid. I was timing at a swim meet during the summer. I was timing because my daughter does swim with our neighborhood. And this girl got out of the pool and she said to her mom, I'm the slowest swimmer here. I'm the worst swimmer here. I'll never be good at swimming. And I instantly thought, oh, those are just broken soundtracks. We can do something with that. So as a parent in that moment, she could go, wait a second. Is that true? The three questions in the book, is it true? Is it helpful? Is it kind? Is it true you're the slowest swimmer? I don't think it's true that you're the slowest. Is it helpful for you to say that over and over again? It's not helpful. Let's be, is it kind? Let's be kinder to you. So I think a lot of times as a parent, one of your first things to do is to help your kid, not try to fix it. You don't rush in and go, here's the right thing. What are you doing? Like, kids want us to walk beside them, not rush in to fix. And there's a temptation as a parent. One of the worst things you can do as a parent, I think, is try to fix your problems in your kid. So you've got insecurities, you've got some brokenness that you need to work on, but you try to fix it and go, if I can just fix this in my kid, they'll never have to, they're going to do their own journey. They're going to get their own bruises. And that's hard as a parent. That's why having kids is one of the most beautiful and one of the most stressful things you can do. But I think just often being the mirror to go, hey, wait a second, this is what you're saying. Let's talk about that. Let's look at that versus I have to fix it. Because kids are talking so much that a lot of times what they're saying is going right by and they don't even know they're saying it, but they're programming themselves over and over and over again. And it's your job to kind of pause the programming.
I think your questions are great too, because one of the things that I've read, with kids, and I've tried to do with Logan, because I used to not do this. I made this mistake for a long time, which is when we're trying to fix it or we're trying to make them feel better, we unintentionally send the signal that whatever they're feeling is not appropriate, or like, you're making me uncomfortable with your expression of your feelings. Yeah. And they internalize that, and then they grow up, unfortunately for a lot of us, eating our emotions and doing things like that, because then we don't feel like we can express them, or we feel like my natural emotion is wrong in this situation. Because I don't think emotions are never wrong. They're just showing you it's something that you're thinking, like something is triggering you. There's an interpretation you've got going on. It's just a good way to check in to see what's going on. So that was a really good point.
100%. I mean, I think that a lot of times I'll say, well, that's really hard. I'm sorry you're going through that. That's really challenging. I mean, I joke that one of the hardest things I write as a writer are responses to text messages for my daughter. So Mean Girls isn't a movie, it's a documentary. And as a dad of two teenage daughters, like, sometimes I have to pop in where there's been some weird social situation. I have to jump in and be like, okay, let me, New York Times bestseller, I got to write this text back to this girl who's being a jerk, So I think if we can say, you're right, wow, that was really hard. You never want to say to a kid, it's not a big deal, because a 16-year-old's issue is their entire world. It is a big deal. Like, phrases that never help, or it's not a big deal, calm down. No one ever goes, oh, I hadn't thought of just being calm in this situation. Thank you for that advice. Now everything will be different. This is so helpful. So you just have to, and it's not easy. Parenting's messy. I certainly don't know all the answers, but these are things that we're working on at the A-Cup house.
Yeah, we work on them here at the Crabtree house too. My son, he has autism. And so for emotions, it's amazing, because when he was littler, he had no understanding of emotions. They didn't modeling and watching how things happen it was never going to click for him that way. It literally always had to be explained. And so we've Like I had to get really good at understanding how to just explain emotions and how they're okay. And, you know, let's check in with your body. How are you feeling? Like, it's just, I think it's a gift we give our kids when not only do we learn how to help them navigate and respect them, but then when they can see you doing the same kind of work, when they see you having normal emotions and talking about them in a normalized way, that it is okay sometimes to be upset and disappointed and angry when things don't go your way, but like talking about it instead of just dismissing it or eating it or never talking about it, never displaying it. So can we switch to overwhelm? Because it's another big topic here in sure. the Nobius land. Somebody wants to know if you had any tips or tricks on how to deal with overwhelm.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, often when something's overwhelming, it's become complicated. And maybe I complicated it. Maybe I stacked up 10 things on top of each other. So for me, those two things kind of go in hand, like overwhelming and a complication. So a lot of times I have to simplify it. And I do that a couple different ways. You know, when it comes to ideas, I write them down in a notebook because it's simple. This notebook doesn't have Netflix. It doesn't have Instagram. I can't compare myself to other people with this notebook. So I joke like in paleo productivity, like here's my, like, it's essentially a cave. I also will do this where I'll go, okay, I can't do 1,000 things on this whiteboard. So I have this little whiteboard. It can fit like 15 things and it forces me to only have 15 things I'm working on. So I try to remember, you know, I'll write things on notepads and go, okay, here's a post-it note. So I try to make sure the venue I'm thinking in is necessarily small so that I don't, like, overwhelm for me is if I go, okay, 4 months from now, what am I going to be doing? 3 months from now, what am I going to be doing? And then also the other thing I would say is I think it's helpful to identify overwhelming parts of your week. And an example that would be for me, Sunday afternoon stresses me out. Like it just does. Like, and I used to think, well, so say 15 years ago, I was like, you know, it's because I don't have a job I like. And once I have a job I like, then I won't feel overwhelmed or stressed out on Sunday afternoon. But then I got a job I like, and guess what? Felt overwhelmed. Then I was like, once I start my own company, then I won't feel over. Guess what? I've had my own company for the last 8 years. I still feel that. So one, I acknowledge that. Two, I don't beat myself up for it. Three, I connect with other people. A friend of mine said, hey, I get kind of overwhelmed on Sunday. And I was like, me too. So I have a text reminder on my calendar to text my buddy. And I go, hey, it's Sunday afternoon. Like, make sure you're checking in, like doing your stuff. Like I need to get endorphins on Sunday. I need to eat right on Sunday. I need to connect with community on Sunday. So that's like I can identify that. So I encourage anybody, recognize your patterns and then come up with a plan for your pattern. Don't be surprised 1,000th time when it happens. Like it took me way too many Sundays to be like, wait a second. I feel like I'm noticing a pattern. Sunday afternoon feels a lot of dread. What am I going to do versus being surprised every Sunday afternoon? I still feel the tension, but now I have things I can do and that changes the tension.
Yeah, I think that that's really smart. Like when you really start noticing, like for me, it's Tuesdays. One of the things that I've recently done is notice that I used to have meetings spread out over the course of 2 days. And then mm-hmm. I would spend Monday, because Tuesdays and Wednesdays were like calls and meetings. Mm-hmm. I'd spend all day long Monday dreading Tuesday and Wednesdays. And so I started thinking about like, all right, first of all, I don't want to be dreading them on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. So the first thing I did was like, how can I make any of this easier? What am I saying yes to that I don't need to say yes to anymore? Like I just started re-examining things. I think a lot of times the way that I like to think about it is reoccurring feelings like overwhelm, dread, anything that's coming up, it's a signal to figure out what's really going on here and what can I do about it. I think a lot of times we just think these things are just happening and that, you know, like I just need a trick to get out of it. It's like, no, it's really a signal to check in to see what's really happening for you so that you can start rearranging your life a little bit. Like coming up with, you know, somebody to text. I have a girlfriend that I talk to every single morning. Every single day, because I wake up in a shit mood most of the time. Yeah. And like the first thing I do is I Marco Polo her on a walk every day and I unload. And by the end of it, I feel bad. Like I've talked my way through it. And it just knowing that she's going to listen helps me immensely every day, just kind of get me framed up and ready for the day.
100%. A friend of mine, Colleen Berry, I love the episode we got to do. I hope everybody has listened to our interview on my podcast. But I interviewed a woman too named Colleen Berry, and she talked about how we all kind of have an owner's manual, and you figure out what's your owner's manual. And so, you know, you figure out, okay, here's what I need for a healthy Sunday, or here's, you know, if something gets canceled and you are thrilled, like you're overwhelmed with joy, you might not need to do it again. Like if you, like if somebody cancels on something, like a friend, it could be a friend canceling coffee and you go, oh, thank God. Thank God I don't have to see her. You probably don't need to set up another coffee with her. Like, because your body just told you, hey, all of us on the inside are thrilled that you canceled. You probably don't need to say yes again. And so you have to go, okay, wait a second. What just happened? How can I learn from it? That's why so much of it, like that's, you know, so much of this is learning how to pay attention and be quiet enough and not distracted enough to go, what's really going on? And how do I kind of tinker? Like, you're right. It's not one thing. The book talks about it's a dial, not a switch. But you think about if you're in the laboratory of you and something blows up, it doesn't mean you failed. There was an explosion. You go, okay, well, let's not mix those things again. Okay, we're learning. You're tinkering. Imagine your life like a big laboratory and you're trying experiments and there's beakers everywhere and Bunsen burners. And you go, okay, we're figuring this out as we go. I know more about me at 45 than I did at 35. And I like me a lot more too. And I think if this keeps going, 55 is going to be dope. Like 65 is going to be dope too. Like, let's go. That's the process I'm on.
Do you think some of our, like, you call them soundtracks. Ours is called The Old Shitty.
Yeah, so great.
Yeah, we're all.
Yeah,
we're
you
all
are trying so hard not to swear in our podcast interview, and it cracked me up because I could see, like, you would say something, you would kind of rewrite it in your head, and then you would say it again. It was so great.
It's so funny. Like, I can cuss all day long and not break a sweat. I have to go on a podcast where I don't cuss, and by the end, I'm like in a full-on sweat.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's a full-body workout. I love it.
Pretty much. But, like, so for deeper ingrained soundtracks, like, a lot of, like they'll say, like, all right, I'm all good with changing some of them. But there's these few that are, now they're the serious ones. They're the ones that really matter. Do you have any, like, what are your thoughts on one, like, I guess they're commonly reoccurring. They feel very true, even though you know it's a thought, but it still feels really true. Do you have any, is there any extra advice or anything, just insight around that?
Yeah, I mean, I think give yourself time. Like, give yourself, like, if you've been listening to it for 10 years, like, even a year of working, it might take a long time. Like, we want, you know, it's human nature to want fast results. Don't even beat yourself up for wanting fast results. That's human nature. So for me, I love to work on a soundtrack and put in work. And then there's this moment that happens where a situation happens and you'd usually react a certain way and you don't. And it's like, and it surprises you because you go, I know how I react to this mother-in-law. Like, I know how I react and I didn't. Wait a second, what just happened? Like, am I starting to have a voice? Like, because maybe that's what you've been working on, is that I get to have a voice. That's your whole soundtrack. I get to have a voice. And all of a sudden, like, we're on the eve of Thanksgiving, and their Thanksgiving can be full of drama, full of stress, and you go, no, or like Christmas. Maybe you've got, like, hypothetical. Some people aren't hearing me, like, he's talking about me. Like, maybe you've got a mother-in-law who's like, Christmas is about me. And I don't care about the grandkids. They come to my house and you hate packing your kids up. And all this stuff, and you want your kids to not feel like they're rushed out the door on Sunday morning, and you go, okay, I get to have a voice. And so this year, because you've been working on, I get to have a voice, and it's in little ways. That's the thing, you practice it. You don't jump right to mother-in-law level. Don't put yourself there. That'd be like if tomorrow, like somebody who's been in no BS for an hour is like, I'm gonna go run the Ironman tomorrow. I think I'm gonna do that. You'd be like, but you just, like, you barely joined. And so I think you practice these, it's the ones that are challenging, and it might take a bunch of renditions, and it might take symbols and might take talking to a counselor who helps you rewire. It might take a daily phone call with a friend, but you get all these tools. You stack the odds in your favor. You use as many different things as possible, not one, not two. And, like, you throw the kitchen sink at this thing, and then someday you're going to wake up and you're going to react in a different way, and you're going to catch yourself and go, wait a second, who just did that? And it's going to be you that just did that. That's how I've seen it happen. And it's amazing when it does.
I think what slows people down the most is getting frustrated that they're still thinking something. And I always tell them, it's like, that is like, like getting ready to eat a shit sandwich and then deciding to pee all over the top of it. It's like you just getting frustrated with your brain never has an upside, especially because our thoughts are like, you know, when you talk about the soundtracks, they're so automatic. They are there. They've been programmed for a long time, just expecting them to go away because you did some work. And I don't care if you, I know for me personally, like thoughts around my body, I'm still working on 15 years.
Yeah.
And I've just decided like, I may always throw shit at my body. I mean, I'm not going to get mad at myself. Like that's never going to help me to be mad. So like, do you have any insights on not pissing all over yourself when you have a
it doesn't move you forward. And so, I mean, I think that's the thing is that it's kind of like, I always tell people like fear is a feeling, afraid is a choice. I'm not going to beat myself up for feeling fear. Like, but I don't want to stay there. I'm not going to make it my idol. I'm not going to make it my king or my queen. Like, but I'm not going to beat myself up in the same way that like the other day I was at a red light. And I looked next to me and there was an armored truck, like a bank armored truck. And my thought in my head was, man, I hope I don't rob that. Like, I hope I'd probably be terrible at that. Like, I hope I don't ram that armored truck and rob that. And I was like, what? Like, that is, it was, you know, some people say an intrusive thought. I didn't beat myself up to go for going, oh man, what a loser. Thinking about robbing that armored truck, that's terrible. Like, I just paused and said, well, that's an intrusive thought. Like, I don't have to invite it all the way in. With thoughts like that, I can open the front door and go, no, like, you don't get to come in the foyer, definitely not the kitchen, but like, I see it. And then like, and then don't get me wrong. There's some where it's like, I've got a revolving door on the front of my house and all the thoughts are coming in. It's like a keg party. And I'm like, what is going on? But in times when I'm patient with myself, when I'm in a healthy circle of friends that are having these kind of conversations, I'm able to go, wait a second, that's not helpful. Like a thing that you helped me with was I asked you with your schedule, how long did it take you to get good at planning? And you said the first, you know, for a while I was 30%. I would overestimate how long some things would take and underestimate others. And I'm in the same spot. I've done this for weeks and weeks now, and I'm not good at naturally estimating. If somebody yesterday said to me, man, Elon Musk's worth has gone up a lot. I was like, what is he worth? Like 30 billion now? And they looked at it, it's 318 billion. I was off by a factor of 10. I'm not good at estimating. I could beat myself up for that and go, I can't believe you thought it would take half an hour and it took 3 hours. Or I can just learn and be patient with myself. And I think I'm the person I spend the most time with. And it's not fun to spend a lot of time with a jerk. So like, imagine like you're spending a lot of time with yourself, and the more you can be patient with yourself, it's a lot more fun.
That's so true. It's I like how you said it's no fun to spend time with a jerk. It's kind of like this cat of mine. He's been a jerk.
I know. I keep seeing that cat. I see that cat is hyped.
He's been hyped since 8 o'clock this morning. We thought earlier, my sister-in-law, she comes over every day and she like helps out and stuff. She said, I think Luau's trying to tell us something. I was like, that fucking cat is not Lassie. He's just dumb.
Yeah. Nobody's in a well. Nobody is trapped in a well right now.
Luau is just wanting to get outside.
Cat wouldn't care if somebody was in a well in general. They'd be like, it's all right.
No, he'd only go outside. He wouldn't go outside to rescue him. He just likes to get out. So anyway, yeah, he's going to keep milling around. He's always around. All right. Well, let's close out. Let me ask you this. Yeah. What are the soundtracks that you're personally working on now? Is there any in particular that you're working on that might be helpful?
Yeah, I'm looking at my list. So what I like to do is I keep a list of ideas. So one soundtrack I'm working on is changing my fuel, the fuel that kind of drives me. And I don't know if we talked about this on our podcast, but I realized, and this is one you talk about. One last soundtrack that'll take a long time. And this one's taking me a while and I'm still in the middle of it. I'm not done by any imagination, but I realized that like 12 years ago, I had an ad agency I started that failed, like just blew up in my face. And I had to save the day and swoop in and save this one client. And I learned I can function in a crisis. That's not a bad thing to learn. That's good information. It's true. But over time it mutated into, I function best in a crisis. And it's a subtle shift, but it's a big one. And then over time, it mutated further into, I need a crisis to function. And now I was the type of leader who, there's leaders who are great at putting out fires, but in the absence of fires, they feel worthless. And leaders don't like feeling worthless, so they start fires. Everyone watching this right now has had a manager or a boss who was a chaos machine. When there was no chaos, they felt uncomfortable and they stirred it up. And my wife said to me 4 years ago, because I got a new book deal, and she said, you're a jerk for the 2 years when you write a book, and you're a jerk for the 2 years when you sell it. And that's not going to work for this marriage. Like, I'd rather you be a happy plumber than a miserable writer. And so what I realized is I often will use stress and chaos and fear as a fuel, which is an okay short-term fuel. I accomplished a lot of things, but it's no longer true. Like, we're not about, like, we're not in financial dire straits. Like, we've done a lot of hard work over the last couple of years. Like, that's not true anymore. It's also, it makes me a jerk to be around. It makes me hard to be around for my kids. There's a lot of stress in the house. So one that's a work in progress right now is how do I create at a sustainable level with a fuel that's not chaos and stress and anger and all the negative things that I've sometimes bastardized into a fuel. So that's a soundtrack that right now I'm really kind of engaged in my own life.
Well, I will tell you, there's hope for you, John A. Cuff, because I used to be that chaotic asshole boss on our team. I took a lot of, one of the things that I realized that was happening with me was that in order to feel important and feel needed and to feel like we could be successful, is I had to be solving problems all the time. And so when the team started getting really good at solving the problems, then I felt unimportant, not needed, bored. Yeah. And so then I started creating more problems to satisfy my need. And it really dawned on me that was a pattern of behavior that I needed to disrupt in my life. Like, that was going to have to go away. And it started with, it's kind of the same as you. Like, there was a time in my life where I never felt important, but I was really good at getting shit done. I was always recognized for being the person who, like, could get things across finish line. If everybody else was a shit show, Corinne could get it done. So a lot of my self-validation came from that. And so I watch a lot of our women do that too. They, you know, they want to be, they say yes to a lot of things, and then they say no to their weight loss. And then they are burning out because they're saying yes to things because they don't feel important to themselves. They haven't learned how to talk to themselves yet. And so then they go out in the world, burn themselves out, become people pleasers, and never have time for weight loss, all in this like silly cycle of, you mean the shortcut could be I could just start appreciating myself and I could give up all this extra action that's going on?
Exactly. That wasn't valuable. That wasn't filling me. That, you know, it created the chaos, the storm to hide in.
Yeah.
But, you know, to me, I think that's a challenge that a lot of people, myself included, go. So another thing I would say is, like, I work with people and I'll tell them, your art isn't your identity. It's a byproduct of your identity. Like, it's what created the art. So a lot of writers, same thing. Like, if I confuse my identity with a book I write, then a one-star review is a review of me. Like, that should be painful. If it's a product I created in a book and I poured myself into it, but I took my heart with me so that I could write the next one. Like, I didn't leave it there. Like, I have to be bigger than that. So for me, I can tell when I'm in a healthy place and I'm creating great things and I'm serving people versus when it's now my identity. And you can go, wow, that, you know, and you see that all the time online where somebody's thing has become their identity. And it's like, there's this like whiplash when somebody criticizes it because it feels like a personal attack versus, I don't like your program. I don't like your book. I don't like your system. And you go, okay, well, that, you know, it's understandable. Like, I don't like everything. Like, my wife doesn't like Red Hot Chili Peppers. Like, she just can't, like, Foo Fighters, Red Hot Chili Peppers, and Smashing Pumpkins. She's like, I just don't like them. But, like, she gets to not like things. Other people get to not like things too. Like, you're not going to be for everybody, and that's okay. So that's kind of how I look at it.
Well, I appreciate you coming as usual. I know our ladies love you. So I want to talk to you. I'm going to email you, but at some point we need to have coffee. We live too close together to not.
I know, it's ridiculous.
Like, have coffee at some point. So that'd be awesome. But I do appreciate you.
I would love that. And I will, when we get I will make sure you get a copy of the Soundtracks for Teenagers. When it comes out, I will 100% get you some of those. We'll do this again around how do we help these teenagers we've got.
That'd be great. We have a lot of parents in here and they would love the help. So totally. Appreciate it. All right. Well, thank you. All
right. Guys.
Bye. All right, everybody. Well, I hope y'all enjoyed it. I purposely moved the chat away because I would get caught up in reading everything that you guys are talking about. So I do hope you enjoyed it. He is a genuine person. I have talked to him several times and I just know his heart's in the right place. And I just think I like humor. I enjoy his book. So if you know of anyone who's not read the books, please share it. He's a great person. If you don't follow him already on Instagram, follow him on Instagram. He is hilarious and he talks a lot about his life. And you can just tell he adores his children. I mean, he just is, he's a superstar in my eyes. So y'all have a good one. And I will, let's see, what is today? Today's Monday. I will see y'all Wednesday for Q&A, and we are doing relationships around the holidays, and we'll be doing all the coaching for all of that. So be prepared. Bye, y'all.